Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you, Scott?
Doing just fine. Ready to get through another news episode here. They keep coming up pretty quick.
They do. And there's always lots of news to cover.
It's surprising how quick the cloud changes, huh?
Yes, always changing. Other than that, dealing with a bit of a cold this morning. So if I sound a little goofy, it's because my nose is running, my throat hurts. So I'm drinking coffee and tea.
Excellent. Well, let's go ahead and get through this then.
All right. So where do you want to start with news?
Ooh, you want to talk a little bit about Skype?
Sure. So we can start with the Skype for, we got a whole bunch of Skype stuff in here. A couple different Skype things. So first one is Microsoft Pulse is now available in Skype Meeting Broadcast. So if you haven't used Microsoft Pulse, it's a voting app that lets you throw out polls to attendees in real time, gives you information about the people that are attending. So this is a polling app that now you can integrate, you can add right into your Skype for Meeting Broadcasts.
Yeah. So Pulse used to be a free service, and it shall no longer be free since it's going to be integrated into Skype Meeting Broadcast. I don't know. I don't think a lot of people know that Skype Meeting Broadcast is even out there.
I don't either.
Let alone that it does things like Pulse and you know, meetings of up to 10,000, attendees who can listen in. And it's a pretty interesting product. So if nobody's gone out and turned that one on and you want to play with Pulse just for giggles, definitely go and check it out in your tenant.
We should do an episode coming up here on Skype for Business and talk about some of this stuff.
If you insist.
All right. Sounds good.
So there was another Skype one as well. Skype for Business integration is coming to Yammer.
Oh, yay. I think.
Right? Just what everybody wanted. But it's not coming to Yammer in the way you think it would, where Yammer has its chat buttons and all those kinds of things. And you'd say, hey, that'd be a great use for Skype. Really, all that's happening is the Skype integration that you see in the sweep bar, the Office 365 navigation bar, in experiences like Outlook or SharePoint Online, things like that, is coming over to Yammer as well. So now, if you do have active Skype for Business conversations, you'll see those pop up in the web client when you're over in Yammerland.
All right. So now it gives me even more reason to just stay in the browser all the time and forget these local clients, right?
Sure, unless you actually want to do anything with it, like send somebody a picture, have like actual persistent chat keep your Skype client open.
Keep my Skype client. Well, I'm on a Mac. Mine's hit or miss.
Even there, they just had a new one come out last month. You just keep installing every month and you'll be okay.
Hope that it keeps working or starts working. One of those two.
Yeah. Did you see there's another Yammer thing too?
I did not see the other Yammer thing.
So Yammer is going to start pushing out their new desktop app.
Oh, yes. I did see that because I actually installed it.
Oh, well, was my sarcastic enthusiasm going there. Like, yeah, we really needed another desktop app for Yammer because the notifier was so awesome.
Yeah, that was my faked real enthusiasm. I installed it and I'm like, this is... So have you installed it yet? Have you actually looked at it?
It has not presented in any of my tenants yet.
Okay. So my tenant, it presented the other day. I opened it and I'm like, this looks like the web page in a frame that launches as an app.
Yeah. From what I've seen of screenshots, if anybody's ever been on a Mac and they've used something like Fluid, which just wraps web pages, same kind of thing. So where they've gone the extra step with some of the clients like Teams, right? It is a web wrapper, but had some native bits thrown into it. Yammer is pretty much, we threw a UI web view or something in there and had some fun.
Yeah, that's about it.
But it's going to be available for Windows 7 and later. So they're even going to cover the old folks, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that will be nice. Again, I don't know. I'll see. I know people are clamoring for it. I don't see a lot of benefit in it yet, especially because it's just, like you said, that web app and a wrapper. We'll see. Maybe this is going to be far more popular than I anticipate.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't get your hopes up too much, but whatever. It's a way to increase engagement. So let's take it for what it is there. And so moving on, Skype, Yammer, what else is going on in the world?
Office 365 Secure Store.
Secure Score. What's going on over there?
Yeah. So it's not all you SharePoint people that listen, this is not in any way, shape, or form related to the Secure Store that was in SharePoint. The Secure Score analyzes your security based on activities, security settings, essentially gives you a score of how secure your Office 365 tenant is. So they're rolling out some new features in this, integrates some third-party stuff in there. So they've added some third-party integration, ability to ignore some controls because it's not relevant to you. So if you're not using certain features, you can say, hey, ignore this certain activity, this certain control because it's not relevant to our organization.
Yeah. So really what it is at the end of the day, you know, you would sign into this service and it was dynamically, a dynamically generated score. Think like, going out and looking at your credit score if you're in the US. So you have this number that's associated with the health of your tenant and all the things you've consumed. One of the problems with that, and if you looked at it kind of as a bigger organization or somebody who consumed a bunch of services, you would hop in on day one and they would calculate a dynamic score and maybe your maximum would be, say, like 800 points, right? And you would look at your score and your score would be 20 out of 800. And you would look at that and you'd go, wow, that's horrible. I've got a lot of stuff to fix. And then you start reading through it. And one of the things that you're scored on is, do all of your admin accounts use MFA? Well, it only recognizes MFA if you're using Office 365 or the Azure AD MFA that's included with your tenant. If you're not using that, and maybe you're using MFA someplace else, like maybe you've got RSA tokens for your admins and you're doing that over in ADFS or some other identity provider, SecureScore knew nothing about it. So you would take the ding and take the hit, and then you'd have to go back to your boss and say, hey, I know this number's low, but it should really be theoretically higher, but I don't know how much higher because it's dynamically generated and it might change next month and be all over the place. So really, it's giving organizations a little more operational control. So you should have some more data as an IT pro and an admin to step in and say, realistically, based on our footprint and how we deploy Office 365, here's where we're at, not just from where Microsoft sees us, because it's one of those blended dynamic score things, also kind of where you fall with your peers.
Sounds good.
You should go in and turn it on one or two.
Well, I looked at it a while ago and I haven't played with it lately. Again, being an organization of one, it's hard to play with some of that. I have a few clients that have turned it on and looked at it, but we haven't gone into a whole lot of detail with it yet.
Yeah, I think from that side, right, being in a consultancy, it's one of those trusted advisor things. You can say, hey, let's go turn this on because it'll identify the things that we can fix. So what are the low-hanging fruit and things we should look at? And then, you know, you can do that always be selling thing and sell yourself, hey, I can help you fix that.
Yeah, and I actually have one client. We actually just had a call about this this week, so it's on my list.
Excellent. You want to talk about SharePoint a little bit since you seemed pretty hung up on SharePoint and Secure Stores and things?
On the SharePoint Secure Store, I like my SharePoint. I've been doing it for a while. SharePoint has a special place in my heart.
We'll get you away from that. Don't worry.
So one of my favorites, because this has been a pain for me as well as some of my clients, is Microsoft finally realized that we tend to switch back and forth a lot between the whole modern UI and the classic experience when it comes to lists and libraries. I don't know how many of you have ever had to switch back to the classic UI for some reason. Again, there's certain functionality that doesn't work in the modern UI yet. Once you get to classic, it can be really hard to get your browser to switch back to the modern UI. I've struggled with it. I have clients that have said, hey, I switched to classic. How do I get myself back to the modern UI? Well, you no longer have to worry about that. Microsoft is adding a link over on the left side. I haven't seen it pop up yet in any of my tenants, but it should be over on the left side in the quick launch navigation that'll let you exit from the classic experience to get back to the modern UI. I'm a big fan of the modern UI. I like to be in the modern UI as much as I can, but again, certain things don't work there yet. So this should allow you to very quickly switch back and forth between a modern UI and the classic experience when you're looking at your lists and libraries.
Yeah, this will be a nice one. It was always really hard to explain to people. So you click that button. So now just click here and click refresh. Oh no, not that refresh, the hard refresh. And oh, by the way, we might need to dump your cookies and cache and have have you sign back in and
restart your machine.
Some weirdness along the way. So it's nice, right? It keeps you in the experience and it gets you where you need to be. And now that you can flip back and forth, so you can go from modern to classic and come back to modern. Once you come back to modern, you can take advantage of some of those nifty new columns that they added to the creation experience.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the next one, is now you can create, configure some additional column types. So before, in that modern UI, they made it nice and quick and easy to create new columns. You didn't have to go all the way into your list settings. They expanded that. So you can create some additional column types now in right within the modern UI. Again, nothing you need to do, nothing you need to change. It looks like now you'll be able to create number columns, yes, no, person choice, hyperlink, picture, single line of text, multiple lines of text. It should be out in most tenants anytime. They're going to be rolling it out late in July, which is right about now, or already last month by the time you guys will hear this episode.
Yep. And that'll take a couple months to roll out. So that's going to kind of follow that general cadence of, you know, the way everything else has been going around up there.
Right. There's a few servers to roll it out across.
Yeah, just a couple. You know, these things take time. So another kind of SharePoint, just one, because it's built around a SharePoint experience, is OneDrive. So OneDrive, being based on SharePoint, picked up a bunch of new auto detection for some new image types. So now you can go ahead and do things like upload receipts, all your screenshots, envelopes, all that good stuff. They even pointed out x-rays in this announcement, and go ahead and have some OCR against those. So while you've always been able to upload and put those things in there, you're going to get some additional search capabilities. So kind of bringing that experience in line with some other places, if you think about like capabilities in OneNote or something like that along the way.
All right. They keep making OneNote better. OneNote, OneDrive. This cold is going to my head.
Yeah. Well, this one's really cool. So it's going to do a couple things other than like OCR too. So you'll be able to do what it's supposed to let you do is maybe you take a picture of a whiteboard. And if you upload that picture into your OneDrive, it's going to come back and actually tag it with a content. And it's going to say, hey, I know this is a whiteboard. So they're going a little bit beyond just, you know, what's the content in the image or the picture, and bringing some stuff back around it.
All right.
Which would be super nifty, right? Everybody loves their kind of whiteboard pictures when they get done with all their meetings.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that you're able to start taking advantage of, even now in Office 365, that leverages some of those cognitive services in Azure is pretty cool. Again, like we talked about, some of the stuff in Stream, being able to pick up faces and recognize people in videos, some of this image search. Again, it's all backed by some of that Azure stuff.
Yeah, it'll be pretty fun. So there's another SharePoint one, probably make you pretty happy, right? Site collection audit logs are changing a little bit.
Audit logs, yeah. So site collection audit logs, this is what allows administrators to essentially keep that log. What's going on with the content on my site? What are people deleting? What are they changing? What's being modified? Starting July 24, so actually a couple days ago when we recorded this, this audit log feature is now enforcing a 90-day retention period. So if you used this before, you're going to be automatically updated to the new retention policies settings. Any new subscribers will be set to 90-day retention right out of the box. So you can either keep this audit log for 90 days, or if you do want to, you can put a smaller number of days, but you cannot keep this audit data any longer than 90 days now. This doesn't impact the unified audit experience that's in the Office 365 Security and Compliance Center. This is just the SharePoint Online Site Collection Admin Audit Log.
Yeah, so my way of reading this one, because audit logs have kind of always had, if you were doing the right thing, you would have been configuring a retention and a trim anyway. And retention's a little confusing in this one, because typically we think of retention as go ahead and cut off all the stuff behind it. But in this case, for SharePoint audit logs, retention is when you hit that marker of a max of 90 days, go ahead and generate my Excel file and dump that out to the document library that I've gone ahead and said to do that to. So it's not that you're going to lose the data past 90 days. You can absolutely have 365 days of data. It's just that data isn't going to be available. You wouldn't be able to do like an unlimited retention. It's going to be sitting in those Excel files. So it's getting purged out of SharePoint on the back end and being presented to you through Excel, you know, in a manner that you can consume.
Yeah, which means that you pay for the storage space now to keep lots and lots of audit data.
You know, those things weren't that big to begin with. Yeah, those are those quasi XML-ish things that open in Excel, but they're really XML. And yeah, all sorts of fun stuff going on there. But the sky is not falling. Your data will not go away after 90 days. It will just be in Excel where it was supposed to be anyway, so that it's not degrading the performance of your multi-tenant environment over in Office 365.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's about all it does it for SharePoint. We missed one of the Scape for Business updates.
Oh no. How could such a thing happen?
I'm going back in time to Scape for Business.
What did we miss?
We missed Scape for Business call analytics reporting preview.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about this one and I hopped in and was looking at it because I was like, what was the call analytics preview? How did I miss the announcement or what was going on there? So if you've ever been into Scape for Business, there was a call analytics feature in the regular Scape for Business admin portal they get presented. And now over in that new preview portal, you will have access to some richer analytics over on that side. Specifically, you'll have access to real-time call analytics, which is super cool. So you can actually, I don't know if you've had a chance to play with this one yet, but you can hop in, you and I could be on a Scape for Business call and say there's some huge like performance degradation, or I'm just having trouble understanding you, you're having trouble understanding me. What I would be able to do is, you know, if I'm in a large organization with like an established help desk, I would be able to call into tier one. And if I've given them access to that, I can say, hey, I'm having trouble in this Skype call. They can actually look up the quality of that call in real time as it's going on. Say, look at my last name and say, oh, good. Found you, Mr. Hoke. And yeah, we can see that location X is having a bunch of trouble. So, you know, it's on your end. Maybe there's another path we need to go down. To take real advantage of this feature, if anybody hasn't looked at the Skype call analytics stuff in the past, it's super helpful if you upload a CSV file. So Microsoft has a documented format for like a tenant/building CSV. And what you do is you define your outbound IPs per office or physical location that you have. And literally you tie it down to zip code and street address and all those kinds of things in the CSV file. And then when you go into call analytics, you'll not only see like, hey, Scott's having a problem, but you'll also see based on the location and IP range and everything that's associated with the outbound metric that you're coming out of to hit the internet and ultimately get over to your tenant. So some super powerful stuff there.
Yeah, and it looks like there was maybe even a little confusion about, well, the header is a little bit misleading too, where it says Scape for Business Call Analytics Preview. Another part of that is they actually just kind of moved it from a public preview to an open preview. So previously you had to sign up for the preview in the public preview. Open preview means it's still in preview, but you don't have to sign up for the program. You can just go to adminportal.services.scapeforbusiness.com and sign in, and all the analytics will be there. So yeah, like you said, some of it, it's some adding some of the voice quality stuff, but also they kind of changed the state of the preview program.
Yeah. And this is going to be a feature that when it comes out, it's going to be on by default for everybody. So being that, you know, if you have a global admin account, you're interested in your Scape analytics, you do go through a little bit of an onboarding experience the first time you sign in. So it's worth just heading over there and kind of walking through and seeing what's what over there. And again, if you're an IT pro or you're an organization that's doing operational help around Scape for Business and call quality, you're definitely going to want to look into doing that CSV and those tenant building files.
Yep. So let's take a quick break. Quick word from BitWizards, and we'll be back with more news.
You love technology, so do we. You're an experienced IT pro. We respect that. You're a problem solver. We've got clients. You need a tan. We've got a beach. You love Azure. We love Azure. At BitWizards, we've won Florida Trend Magazine's Best Companies to Work For 8 years running and have been a Microsoft Gold Partner since 2001. I don't know about you, but it sounds to me like we were meant for each other. Go to bitwizards.com/cloudsmith to introduce yourself.
Okay. And we're back. What news item do you want to tackle next?
So many things. We had a couple of things around Power Apps and Power BI and some of the Power stuff, right?
Yeah, there was a bunch of news articles, updates that just kind of came out in the last few days around Power BI, Power Apps, and Flow.
So one of the ones I saw, really thought it was going to be a super powerful one, was you can embed Power BI reports or dashboards over inside of Power Apps now. So there's a new Power BI tile control, and yeah, you can have at that. So you no longer have to send your users, if there's some form of data associated with the Power Apps that you're going and you were publishing that through Power BI, you no longer have to say, hey, go open up the Power BI app or do anything like that. So you're all in the same place. You're right where you need to be. And that applies to Power BI app or Power Apps on mobile and the web controls, web views, all that stuff.
Yeah, that one was really cool. The other one I really liked was you can now export flows. So if you go in, create your whole flow. Under the covers, I think everybody always knew Flow was kind of built on Logic Apps. They're very similar. Now you can actually export your flows and import them into Logic Apps. So if you started in Flow using Flow in Office 365 and you want to expand it even more, take advantage of some of the additional features and additional functionality that's in Logic Apps, you now have the ability to essentially migrate that flow from Flow to Logic Apps to keep building it out, expanding it even more.
Yeah, there's some super interesting stuff going on there. So if you look at those packages that are generated, they're coming out as JSON files, or you can throw them out as zips, but ultimately it's a bunch of JSON. So you can manipulate that even before you throw it into another environment. There is an MVP out in Australia, John Liu, and we should put a link to his blog in there. But he does all sorts of cool things with Azure Functions and Flow and how they all tie together and what goes on there, and does some breakdowns. He's been blogging a little bit too around the import exports and everything that goes into those. So if you're interested in a little bit more of a life cycle around development of flows, because really that's what we're talking about, right? Is maybe I built a process and it needs to go from like a QA to a prod, or even one tenant to another. I want to share something with my friend. He's got some really cool data on that. They also added the ability not to just do flows, but you can package and import, export Power Apps now as well. So if you do a multi-environment scenario or multi-tenant, depending on how you've gone about your deployment. But if you've configured multiple environments within Power Apps, now you can start to have a little bit of a life cycle there as well, where you can create things in like a dev environment. So when I say environment, I mean like a Power Apps environment, and move it over to like your prod tenancy or your default environment.
Yeah. And another one along the same lines, we're just going to keep going with this whole import-export ability, is now you can take Power BI desktop files. I can't remember what the file, PBIX, that was the extension on those. So you can take those files and actually import them into Azure Analysis Services. So then you can take all of the models, all of the Azure Analysis Services, and use those with this Power BI desktop file, what you've already started developing in Power BI. So again, something that gives you a little bit more. If you're looking for a little bit more functionality, a little bit more power, you've started with Power BI and you're like, we need to do more. Now you can take them, send them over into Azure Analysis Services to do even more with what you've started on with Power BI.
Yeah. I don't know anything about analysis services, yeah. So I'm going to take your word for that one.
Well, I don't know a ton. We've been talking. We need to get somebody, try to get some people on that know a little bit more about the BI side. Maybe get them to come talk about some of the analysis services, Power BI stuff. So we'll see what we can do. We're not going to go into any more depth on that one.
Let's make that one happen. Let's see, what else is going on in here? Did you see the Teams mobile app got updated?
I did. We got some more functionality.
Yeah. Have you tried any of this yet?
I have not tried any of it yet. So my big hang up with Teams right now is, one, I'm a company of one, so Teams is kind of pointless. And two, they haven't enabled external users for Teams, so I can't join any of my clients' teams or have them join my teams. So you get to talk about this.
Gotcha. So what they did was they updated the iOS and Android mobile apps for Microsoft Teams, and you can now join any of your meetings that are configured in Teams. So those would be private meetings or, you know, regular on-the-fly channel meetings right from within those mobile apps. And what they'll do is let you participate with audio and video as well, if you choose to enable the video. So you don't have to hop out to a separate Skype client or anything now. So, you know, again, that's both like your one-to-one private conversations or your team-based video calls. And because they've integrated that experience, it's really kind of Skype-ish, right? Because it's the underlying engine on the back end. So they've got a lot of the same feel going there. You can go ahead and view shared content, go ahead and chat, see participants, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, I like where they're going with Teams. There's a lot of cool stuff in Teams, a lot of stuff they're working on adding to Teams. I'm excited to see how they keep growing, expanding Teams over the next few months, years. So another one, this one's kind of a little devy, but we'll throw it out there in the news, is they now have a sample app for Microsoft Teams. So if you listen to us and you're kind of a closet developer, or like Scott, you're a developer in your past life, you may want to go look at this. There's a sample app for Microsoft Teams. You can go out, get started building your own apps. Who knows, maybe we'll get Scott to build us an app for the podcast so you can get notified of new episodes right within Teams via a podcast app.
Yeah. No, not going to happen. You know, so I think this is continuing to kind of drive that dev story for Teams, right? So we have bots and tabs and all the other things. They picked up Victor Willen's Yo Teams generator, the Yeoman generator for Teams projects. What is that, like a month or two ago now? And brought that into the official like office dev channels on GitHub. So, you know, it's a proper project integrated on the Microsoft side. And this kind of continues to drive a bunch of that stuff forward. So it's nice to have kind of sample guidance. And then if you want to go out and build your own apps, take a look at the Yeoman generator that's out there. And spin things up that way.
All right.
It's all sitting there. Let's see. We got time for what? One more?
Sure. Take your pick.
I'm going to take one that's actually, well, it was relevant to me. So the number of owners in Office 365 groups is increasing. So believe it or not, Office 365 groups do have limits and boundaries associated with them. You know, like I can only have 500,000 groups and a tenant and things like that. And one of those things that used to, and I think still does bite a lot of organizations, is the low number of owners that can be associated with a group. So previously that was 10 owners, and that limit has been increased to 100. And because that owner construct or role is really not an Office 365 group thing, it's part of the Azure Active Directory construct of the group. So now those owner limits are supported across all of Azure Active Directory. So when you're doing things and creating a group, whether you're creating it through the AD portal, PowerShell, the Office 365 portal, Exchange Admin, any of those kinds of things, you're going to have that ability to do that. And then one of the other things that comes along with this is for organizations that run, either you're in a hybrid mode or you're just straight up Office 365, Exchange Online, and you create all of your distribution lists in Exchange Online or on the cloud side, there's been some native functionality for a while where Microsoft on the regular prompts distribution list owners to see if they would like to upgrade their traditional distribution list to Office 365 groups and go down that path. So if a group, not a group, if a distribution list had more than 10 owners associated with it in the past, they would have been ineligible for that upgrade. So now if they are eligible now, they're going to start getting prompted for those as well. So you might want to inform your users and let them know that was coming, or do like a quick dump of all your DLs that are in Office 365. Just take a look at some of the metrics and see if you have any people, they're going to be asking you some weird questions about, hey, why am I being asked to upgrade to this groups thing?
Very nice. Yeah, 10 seems really low for group owner limit. So it's nice. Nice that they updated it.
Well, it is when you look across the stack, right? And what Groups is meant to be kind of subsuming functionality for. So for something like Yammer, I don't know how it goes in like your clients. I have a lot of Yammer groups with more than 10 admins in them, right? They're like these very driven things where, you know, they go above that limit. So they need that functionality because now that's an Office 365 group and it all kind of drives back. Also with like bigger DLs and things like that, you know, you do run into it. So it yep. is welcome functionality.
Yeah, I agree. It made sense for maybe like a SharePoint site, but for the gamut, when you look at everything Groups controls, you really do need that higher limit.
All right. Well, I think that takes us to the end.
I do too. Hopefully we were able to keep this one under 30 minutes. If not, it'll be really close.
If not, we'll just delete some stuff.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, right. Scott.
Thanks, Ben.
Yep. Talk to you next week. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.